Grizzle Pod, episode 3, Scotty.
We're here, Tom. We're here.
A big week, man. When has it not been a big week?
Lately, yeah, we get no break, but this is where Grizzle thrives. If you're trying to make sense of the market, you came to the right place today.
No doubt. Scott, hit him with the agenda. Let's get to it. All right, everyone.
Here's what we're talking about today. So first, we got bond investors are sending markets lower. We're going to talk about why markets were in the red last week. Then we got the red market showed us there's some weakness in certain specific companies and ETFs. It's ARK and Tesla. We're talking about whether they're canaries in the coal mine. And then we have Bitcoin, gold, and silver weakness, putting that in perspective. And then we got to talk pot stocks. We had a great interview last week and with some tidbits for you on what the next law is going to be that's going to supercharge these stocks. Yep. Then we're talking GameStop. It's back in the spotlight. Stock was on fire last week. What's going on? And lastly, the SPAC game heating up even more. Celebrities are in. What you should do there.
Celebrity SPACs. There you go. Oh, this is a big agenda here, guys, but each one of these points is critical. Scott, let's hit point one.
All right, market performance. That's what we're looking at. So we had a little rough week last week. The NASDAQ was down 5%. S&P was down 2.5%. But outperforming them was still commodities. So what's going on? How are commodities not going down while the rest of the market is?
So commodities were
flat. They were flat, yes.
More or less. So yeah, so we're, you know, this is a fascinating time, right, Scott? These show what, in a lot of ways, what's interesting here is commodities there that was flat really started this, it was one of the key indicators to why this sell-off happened, right? Because of, what's the magic word?
Inflation. Everyone, you got to listen. When we tell you inflation, your ears better perk up because it's driving the market right now.
Exactly. So we can kill this graph. But so critically, inflation is what everyone's talking about. And quickly, because people were just really focused on stonks, Scott, no one really... A lot of new investors in the market, no one really caring about the bond market, not even knowing what the bond market
is. That was not on their radar until last week.
No, so quickly, we've had all of financial Twitter become bond armchair bond
investors. They learned what a bond was pretty quick last week.
or tried to read the tea leaves. And meanwhile, if you were listening to the Grizzle pod after pod through it, or Chris Wood, we've been talking about yield curve control before it was fashionable. Yeah,
and helping you understand why those high flying tech stocks, they don't go up when interest rates are going up.
Clearly, an interesting week for the market that was driven by what they call the bond vigilantes, Scott. So bond investors are large institutions, and when they say "net," the yield that I'm getting is not enough. It's going to have to be higher. That's what you call bond vigilantism, and
bond vigilantism just means a sell-off in the bond market. People are selling their bonds.
Yeah, and in a rapid rate, right? So one thing we talked about through our show last week, we go live every trading day. And what we talked about specifically, Scott, is that it's the rate of change of these yields that's been a challenge, right? So where does the 10-year sit today, Scott?
The 10-year is at 1.4. It peaked at about 1.5 last week. It was off on Friday. Right. But as Tom's talking about, it's all about the rate of change. So the problem is that the 10-year yield is up 1% in the last 5 or 6 months, which is a lot for the 10-year. And that started to feed through into the stock market last week, because when yields are going up, it means the cost of money is more expensive, and that's not good for very expensive stocks.
Exactly. So, we've talked about it in previous episodes, but then you get to a point of yield curve control, because this is not what the Fed wants. Scott, we've still got Main Street unemployed, still waiting for $1,300 checks. You know, there's the stonk market that is going ballistic, but then you've got basically shuttered stores, Main Street's battered.
Millions of people unemployed. We're still in a pandemic. So they don't want to be getting tight with money, making money hard to come by when people are still out of work.
You nailed it. You don't want to get tight with money here. And this is a headache for the Fed here. And we've talked about yield curve control. Chris Wood, our brilliant strategist, Chris Wood, has highlighted, you know, what the next step is here. And they've got to get at this pretty quickly, Scott. They can't let the narrative get away. They've got to step in and basically fix the yield curve. That's what you got
to
do.
And they're doing that, right? Because they want to fight inflation and they want money to continue to be easy.
Exactly. So that, you know, that's the next story here. Yield curve control has already happened in two countries. The big project obviously is Japan. It's happened in Japan. And then we had Australia do it. Again, the biggest experiment of them all, Scott, will be America.
It's the big economy. It's the one. Everyone wants their dollars. So when they go yield curve control, it'll set the tone for the rest of the world.
Exactly. And once that happens, one of the big risks, obviously, is inflation, because clearly there becomes an issue where, okay, well, our yields are fixed. It doesn't make the problems go away, right, Scott? Ultimately, if the cost of things are going higher, it'll get defined in another way. And that's through exchange rates that, you know, you'll get the U.S. dollar starting to weaken. And this is we're in unorthodox times. We've talked about the historic levels of money printing. I think that, you know, it's been memed up every which way. The printer go burr.
Yeah,
you know,
some good memes on that one.
Yeah, exactly. And all of these are fine, well, and good. But once the rubber hits the road, Scott, things get quite dicey quickly, right? As we saw last week, everything.
Yeah, inflation's not good for the stock market. Rates going up really fast, not good for the stock market. So that's why we're watching so closely, because stock valuations are at all-time highs. So little changes in interest rates can have those stocks sell off quite a bit, as we saw last week. Talking about stocks selling off, that may take us to topic number two.
Ooh, you look at
ARK and you look at Tesla. They did not perform like the NASDAQ, like the S&P. They did far worse.
Got it.
So for anyone who's not looking at the chart, NASDAQ was down 5% last week. But the ARK ETF, which is kind of the bellwether for expensive story stocks, it was down 15. And then Tesla was down 13.5. So a lot worse than the market. Are these guys kind of the canary in the coal mine, Tom, to show us that there's some cracks in valuations in stock market prices?
Yeah. So, Scott, you had a brilliant chart earlier this week showing the amount of sell-off relative to price to sales ratios, right? And we can't even talk price to earnings because a lot of these stocks aren't even
there. Yeah, where's
the
earnings?
Right?
I can't find them.
And so you got we're clearly, you know, I call it the sci-fi market, right? You know, with the sci-fi market, one other stock that sold out pretty dramatically was a ticker SPCE, which is Virgin Galactica. Like, these are all just super concept stocks, like big note, like funny. And this is, you know, funny money stuff that this is not what Grizzle does, right? And we're clearly defined in millennial trends, but our backing is that there's underlying
the real
cash flow that ultimately
companies with cash flow either on the horizon soon or they're already generating it, versus these ones that need the story to keep playing out or the stock doesn't go up, it falls 50%.
Yeah. And your chart that highlighted the correlation of, if you had a very high multiple, you sold off much more than those that had lower multiples, really speaks to rising yields, right? Because what happens, Scott, when yields start to rise?
Multiples fall. So last week as well in our show, we looked at what happens to the multiple. Because remember, the price of a stock is how much does it earn times a multiple, you get the price of the stock. So in the 70s, interest rates went through the roof. They went from like 5% to 20% in a year. And the multiple went from 18 to 7. So that would happen again if we get interest rates kind of going crazy, going up, up, up. That could be a problem, because that company you own, they're not going to be able to increase their earnings fast enough. Their multiple's falling. The stock's still going to go down. Worried about that.
So, yeah. So, you know, our strategy of staying away from a lot of this stratospheric stuff, i.e. space travel, Scott.
The analysis I saw on Virgin Galactic was amazing, because they've said, we think we can do like 400 people a year into space. You just say, okay, they're charging this, 400 people, this much revenue. The stock's trading at 100 times that 5 years from now, not even this year. I love it. It's very simple analysis, and you get to this spot where you say, okay, this is a story stock. I know what I own now. or what I don't want to own.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and it's not like you have competitive bidding in the space travel business, right? It's not like you're like, Airbus, Boeing, come on, get me some more planes.
No, it's
here,
what
right?
People can afford, because I think it is $400,000 a trip or something like that. It's not cheap.
Yeah. I think it's $250,000. Who knows? But sounds whatever.
Oh, it's cheap. It's a bargain. $250,000.
I'm not going in my lifetime. Forget that. I'm buying a condo.
I want a planet, like a pleasure planet to go to, right? Then I'm going to the spaceship.
Those pictures didn't look that appealing from Mars, Scott. I have to be honest.
I'd rather just go in the Boeing. They take you up, you know, where they do the dive, and then you can float in the air and be weightless type of thing. That's so cheap compared to just going above the atmosphere and back down for $250,000.
How much is that?
Maybe it could be $20,000.
Hey, listen, maybe I'm converting to space travel.
You're rethinking this whole thing.
I'm rethinking this. That actually sounds pretty reasonable. Anyways, so needless to say, those high multiple stocks were impacted. We'll continue to follow that, right? We've got an interesting guest coming this week, so we'll report back more. Actually, Scott, you know what we'll do? We'll have that as a podcast, because we can throw that on the pod as well.
Yeah, that sounds perfect.
So we've got an interesting guest that has gone down the rabbit hole of ARK. Scott, do you want to talk about what ARK's doing? I think this is very critical, and then we'll have more color when we have our interview next week. But talk about what ARK's doing and the challenges.
Yeah, ARK's an interesting ETF. It's a fund management company, but they have this one ETF where they are very aggressive in buying these future stocks, biotech and space travel, stuff like that. These things that don't have any cash flow and the multiples are really, really high. So they're a bit of a canary where if the market doesn't want to pay those multiples anymore, ARK's going to sell off a lot. Plus, ARK has a problem where people could want to redeem their money from the ETF, but they have these liquid stocks where they can't sell without making those stocks go down a lot. They get caught in a spiral. Yes. So people are watching ARK very closely. ARKK is the ticker, just to see if these guys run into trouble where they're trying to sell their little teeny stocks. They can't do it. Investors want their money out. This ETF could go down a lot more in the market, and that would show that we have a problem in the greater market with valuations and sentiment, and people are getting a lot more nervous.
Yeah, you really summarized that well. And this is, so we've had an experience here in the past in the early 2000 tech bubble with Janus.
They were the arc of the tech bubble, really, right?
Okay. Yeah. So, guys, if you're not following it, follow it very closely. Hey, Grizzle will do it for you.
If you tune in here, we do it all for you. But you can say ARKK, watch the price. It'll tell you if there's bigger problems brewing.
For sure.
So we talked about ARK and Tesla selling off, but what about some of the commodities? We got gold, silver, Bitcoin. These are things that should be working if inflation is on the rise. But we look at what happened last week. It didn't work out that way.
Yeah, so it was... No, so you want to read off the numbers.
Yeah, so gold was down 3%, silver was down 2.4%, and then Bitcoin was down big at 17%. That's kind of par for the course of Bitcoin. It's volatile. It goes up more, it goes down more.
Got it. Yeah, we kill that guy. So Scott, really, I'll give this very, very simple setup here. Again, we've talked about the dynamic nature of what Bitcoin is. Obviously, it's been promoted and presented as a store of wealth, which with all functional basis, it is, Scott, right? It's digital gold. But at the same time, it also carries characteristics very similar to a growth asset. So you've got this hybrid nature that was basically giving it full nitrous relative to gold and silver, which are just store of wealth, right? So then you get this corollary effect that happens with the fact that it is also viewed as a technology leverage asset. So once you start to get Tesla, obviously, remember Tesla? It stepped in there, put it on the balance sheet. So you get the engine there. So you start to see a bit of an effect where ultimately if Tesla starts to fall, you start to see this feedback loop that can go the other way for the asset as well. And not saying it's completely tied to Tesla, but it really does highlight that if the market is starting to view higher interest rates, the challenge for Bitcoin as well, to navigate that, you know, that period as well. So that speaks to Bitcoin for the most part, how it sold off so dramatically. You can the same dynamics that has led to ARK selling off.
Yeah, so Bitcoin Tesla, was working right? a bit like a stock because it just has that demand. The people who are buying ARK are buying Bitcoin. There's other positives going for Bitcoin that have been driving it versus gold. But you see when there's risk off, yeah. some of that hot money comes out of Bitcoin. So it gets hit harder than gold. Plus you have these fundamentals where rising interest rates are a problem for gold, silver, Bitcoin in the short term, though inflation is why you own those things for the long term.
Yeah, and so you're getting so again, if we do have inflation that becomes a serious problem, which Grizzle's view is that we have definitely we definitely have the fodder there to mm-hmm. make that happen, Scott. We're seeing that in real assets, but again, you're not going to see lockstep moves. And specifically, one of the risks as well is that listen, if the market wasn't pricing this in, and now they're potentially pricing it in because yields have risen in bonds because of inflation, Scott. But if they have the view that, wait a minute, if this gets a little too out of control, well, then the Fed's going to have to potentially step in and do what they don't want to do, even beyond yield curve control, and that is to raise rates. So you start to get a bit of that feeding back into gold and silver. Again, if we get into that world where inflation starts to take hold, there are a few places that there will be few places to hide, but gold and silver, potentially Bitcoin definitively also fits that category as well with a ton more volatility. Again, you're going to see lots more volatility in all of these assets.
Yeah, the story has not changed for these three, why you own them. It's just for now, they're selling off a bit because, you know, interest rates are going up in the here and now.
Exactly. And our view, again, our view is you own across the commodity asset class. So you own the gold, Bitcoin, silver for that insurance hedge. But in addition to that, copper, vanadium, you can go down, you know, or the green metals, lithium, et cetera. You want to own the miners there. You want to own what people are using as well. And there's no greater commodity that defines that than lumber. Literally, we're seeing lumber go roof it, Scott, where the quote was, home builders are asking Biden to help.
if you need Biden to save you, you're in trouble.
So
lumber is just another example of what's happening in commodities. The price of all commodities are going up, and then COVID has caused some supply issues that are making it even worse.
So that's that. What's the
So we got to talk a little bit of pot stocks. That's our bread and butter. We had an amazing interview with Jason Wild, who is chairman of TerrAscend. They're one of the big U.S. multi-state operators last week. And he gave us some great intel on what laws us pot stock investors should be looking for to drive those stocks to the next level. Remember, the catalyst we already got, Biden's president. The Senate ended up going Democrat. The House was already Democratic. So those really drove pot stocks with big gains in the beginning of the year. Now we need to see what's next to get them going again. And Jason gave us some really good intel. Yeah.
Great. It was great. Like, are you going to get to, so what are the tidbits?
So the big takeaway is what he said is that everyone he talks to in the industry, they're thinking that you need to look for a Safe Banking Act. What that means is right now, the cannabis business is a cash business. You're driving around in your armored cars, moving cash around. It's very inefficient. You make less money and they pay really high taxes. Plus you can't get normal loans from the banks. So Safe Banking means you can be treated like a legitimate business and you don't have to transact in cash anymore. You can borrow. It makes a lot of things much easier. Plus the biggest one from a investor perspective is they may be able to begin listing their stocks on big exchanges. Because right now, you or me, we can buy these U.S. multi-state operators on what's called the pink sheets. They're, you know, penny stocks, really. But these guys aren't trading for pennies, but there's no liquidity. Some people don't want to invest there. If you see these things get on NASDAQ and the big exchanges, it could make a huge difference in the run that they'll have.
Yeah, and we've already seen demand clearly. There's a ETF, MSOS, that is now nearly hit $1 billion, and that was in very short order. So clearly the demand of having a big board listed cannabis company, having them listed will be very significant.
Yeah, so what surprised me is Jason said that the industry thinks it could be even 3 to 6 months for the Safe Banking type law to pass, which is sooner than I thought. I was hoping by the end of the year. These stocks, remember, are selling off last week with the general market. But if this comes through, this is huge to profitability. This would be a big catalyst. So you'd think of last week as an amazing buying opportunity in hindsight if it plays out on this timeline. So that was very interesting that the market in general thinks it could be that soon.
Great. It was an amazing interview. I strongly recommend everyone watch it. Go to our Grizzle YouTube. You can watch it or our Grizzle Twitter. It's there as well. Jason Wild is a fantastic guest. Can't wait to have him on again. What do we got?
Oh, GameStop. So I thought we were done with the GameStop saga, but apparently not. It's back in the news. The stock, I think it was on Thursday or Wednesday. It was sitting around $60, and then it went to $200 overnight. So something crazy going on there. So I just have a quick chart for you. So GameStop ended up, it went down after that big run, but it's still up 150% last week. And then another Reddit, Wall Street Bets favorite, AMC, was up another 40%. So it seems like the Reddit crowd, the Wall Street Bets crowd, has kind of circled back around. They have some new conviction for some reason in these stocks.
Yeah. And so, listen, we're not going, we can cut that chart. We're not going down the whole year of the year. And again, this is not a strategy we recommend in any way, shape, or form investors follow. This is this is obviously new in the sense it's these are dead companies getting bids, et cetera, but it's not any different from bubble assets, et cetera. The way it always works out is you always get your fingers chopped.
You saw that already. I mean, GameStop should have showed you that a few weeks ago. It went to $400, 400 plus, back to $60 less than a week and a half later. So that'll play out again.
Yeah.
What's interesting is, I guess, so GameStop fired their CFO, and that may have been feeding into why this went back up, because investors are betting GameStop will now issue stock, which may save their company because the stock is now worth something. But the question you have to ask is, when they issue stock, if, does it push the stock back down to $20? So as an investor, you're still not winning. The company may have more cash to do something, but you still lost.
Yeah, so this is the joke, right? Like, at the end of the year, this is amazing. Like, all these dead companies should fire their CFO and see what happens to their stock. So, right, so the big faux pas mistake that the GameStop CFO made was when that last time the stock went ballistic, basically he did jack all, Scott. Literally, your company is on the ropes. You should have raised capital. Literally, your company's on the ropes. You, for an unknown reason, your stock has been basically saved by God, which is Roaring Kitty.
AKA
and
Roaring
literally,
Kitty.
You do, AKA Roaring Kitty, and you literally, you do nothing. You sit on your hands. And so, yeah, he got booted.
Crazier because other companies that were being pumped up by Reddit channels were raising money. AMC raised a bunch of money. Not as much as they need, but it made a difference. They paid down some debt. GameStop was at $4. They went to $400. Throughout all of that, management didn't raise any money, which you could raise enough money to potentially buy a new business and get a new lease on life, and they haven't done that, which is a little head-scratcher.
Scott, like literally, if let's just say for hypothetical purposes, you and I were managing ship GameStop. You're the CFO. Literally, our stock is hitting 400, and you're like, hey, don't worry about this. I would pull
I'm going on vacation. See you guys. Let me know when it's back to $4.
I would be like, literally, like, it tells you forget about the CFO not doing anything. The fact that you have everybody in the board and all sitting on their hands saying, yeah, totally, like, let's not do anything, it kind of tells you a lot about the company.
Yeah, the quality of management, their ability to seize on an opportunity.
Oh, totally. Literally, if the CFO's not doing anything, it's up to the next in command, whoever, pull that guy out of the, just raise the money. There should have been somebody doing a 5-alarm blaze here saying whatever. But anyways, needless to say, it's fascinating to watch, et cetera, but do not put
don't get too
money
excited about this move. This is just the volatility of GameStop. And if they do raise money, it probably goes down. So it's watch it from afar for entertainment. This is not one you get involved in.
Exactly. And so we get the question, what's the right capital allocation here? The exact amount of capital you would allocate to playing slot machines, Scott. Yeah. That's the amount of money. So if you got tons of money and you kind of throw, 100,000 in slots, fine. I don't know who it would.
But if you don't have a ton of money, you put like max $100 in. Maybe you make 5,000. If you really hit it big, maybe you lose your $100 and then who cares? You tried.
Yeah. That's the right allocation.
100 bucks. Things. That's the allocation. It's a good number.
So, all right. Celebrity SPAC, Scott. SPACville, SPAC World, SPACtopia. Oh,
so, a little primer. Remember, SPACs, Special Purpose Acquisition Corp. They're companies that all they have is cash. They don't have a business, but they're on the prowl. They want to buy a business. So this has been a new way. If you have a private company and you want to go public, you go to this SPAC and you say, hey, you can buy me out. And then you're now a public company. So this thing, celebrities are getting in the game, Tom. What does this tell you? Does this mean we're in the early innings or getting late in the game here?
I don't know about you, Scott, but when I think about investing, I'm like, which celebrity is endorsing?
It is which celebrity. Jay-Z, yeah, I'd be like, yeah. But then I see A-Rod, I go, don't like that.
Well, you know, it's the pool of celebrity driving to this. And is this a sign you're early in the game, Scott, or late in the game? That's what we should all be asking ourselves. Is it, basically, if you have an umbrella of everyone who is a potential celebrity getting tapped for a SPAC, I don't know. What do the numbers tell us, Scott? Is it whether we're early or late in the game?
You got to look at the real numbers. So a little tidbit for you guys. The amount of money raised from SPACs in January of 2021 was as much as we raised in all of 2019. So the market is red hot. Every kind of company you could think of, from space travel to, like, you know, green vegan food, you know, anything like that, they're all trying to get into their own SPAC. So the market is really hot. Celebrities have sniffed that out. They're getting in. You got to be cautious here because there's a lot of businesses that may not be doing so hot down the road, but they've told you that they're going to do amazing numbers and the valuation reflects that. And so it's going to be tough for them to go higher over time.
Yeah. And so, guys, what we're planning to do is a SPAC 101, SPAC University with Anish Chopra, who joined us on a fantastic Grizzle Live for those who, it's a couple of weeks ago, but he was talking about that was a great episode. We were talking about the whole GameStop, the whole, you know, just it was fascinating.
Yeah, and so this is a guy who used to manage a few $100 billion or so. So he's been around the horn with SPACs and a lot of different other types of vehicles. So he'll be an interesting guy to chat with.
Yeah, so we'll do it because I think it's critical to just really break down the whole structure. But what in our conversations on our Grizzle Live between Scott and I, we're just really, this could get to the nuts of what this is, right? People push the difference between if you're not doing an IPO, you're doing a SPAC, right? And so we got to understand what the drivers
and motivations
are for both.
Why do you do one versus the other?
Exactly. Let me give a very simple example, right? So you have this SPAC vehicle that trades for $10. There's a company saying, okay, fine, roll me into that SPAC, whatever. And then immediately, you know, the hope is that it starts to trade for $20 a share, something like that, Scott, right? Round numbers here. So you're like, okay, great. Investors in the SPAC are like, great, this is why I'm in the SPAC, because the IPO market's rigged and I want to be involved earlier in the process, and here it's all been wonderful. But then you have to really think about it. What company would possibly say, okay, fine, sell me into this unit for 10 bucks and then it goes to 20 bucks and that's all lost value that I could have gained, right? And so what kind of company would do
why,
that?
Why would you one give answer, up Scott. At least 20% of your company, which is part of how SPACs work? You give someone else shares. Why would you do that when you could go public and not give up 20%? So ask yourself that.
And have a double the valuation if it was really worth that much in the public market, right, Scott? So this is really the question here. And the answer is growth, right? If you are a high growth company like Airbnb, why didn't Airbnb SPAC, Scott?
Because they don't need to. Like, they're growing really fast. They can go public. Some of these SPAC companies don't want to go through the rigmarole. And remember, in a SPAC, you can promise the world. You can show crazy charts to say what you're going to do the next 3 years. In an IPO, you can't promise anything. You can say, here's what we did. And then you can have special meetings with big investors and say, we think we're going to do well. But you can't put any of that in your documents. So that's a big difference right there, because some investors who don't know any better can see charts going to the moon and get really excited.
Yeah, and this is the challenge here, guys. That there are a lot of companies that obviously some were funded by VCs for whatever reason, Scott. They never went through the IPO process. I know why. Growth wasn't there, right? Because if growth was there, you would be an Airbnb, or you'd be
begging you for your shares to go public.
Yeah. What's the other one that's coming out? The big one, the video game.
Roblox. Yes.
Roblox. I don't even know the name. We're going to cover that, Scott.
Anyone under 12 years old knows Roblox very well. So the average Roblox is a gaming platform. It's kind of the future. If you ever heard of Ready Player One, that Steven Spielberg movie, it's like that. It's this living, breathing video game world. It's always on. You have an avatar. So I would have the Scott avatar. And I can buy clothes from other people that make these clothes. There's a whole ecosystem. And so this is for young people. And then there's other ones like Fortnite, which is for teens and older. And this one, just the kids love it. They love hanging out with their friends in there. It's like another little world for them. And so this company is going public soon, and people are very excited about it because COVID, you're sitting around, their numbers have gone through the roof. The average Roblox user plays the game 2.6 hours a day, which is pretty crazy. I was talking with my wife about this. We figured out it's probably they come home from school, their virtual school, and then they just play until dinner, and then they eat their food, and then they go to bed, and then they do it again. It works out that way.
We'll be covering that.
Grizzle, if you guys are signed up to our list, grizzle.com/subscribe, we send that out before it starts trading, so you know whether you should be buying it or leaving it for dead.
Guys, thank you for the support of the Grizzle Pod. Whether you're listening to it on iTunes or Spotify, we're on the major platforms there. And also, we've got through the week, we go Grizzle Live. Great interviews, our take on stuff that's happening live. Got it all, Scott.
You tune into any of the Grizzle channels, you'll have a very good handle on what's going on in your portfolio and the market.
Thanks for joining us for another week. We're back at it next week.
Take care, everyone.